Hello and welcome to the Undercut podcast. I'm your host today, Jesse Billington, and we're back to preview the seventh round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Imola Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by Mr. Timo Albers-Daly. How are you?
Not bad, thank you. It's been nice to have a little bit of a break from F1, and I know we're essentially going into a triple header now, but I don't feel as knackered, I think, as we have done for the last couple of years when we've come into this part of the season already, be that for various different reasons. But I like that I'm coming into Imola refreshed because I think we need that. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I think I share your sympathies with it being sort of a refreshed entry to Imola, which is quite nice. But yeah, otherwise sort of general world around me is as busy as always. And I say we're refreshed, but that doesn't necessarily mean that Formula One itself is refreshed or devoid of news.
Oh, not at all.
No, there is a lot to get through, so we ought to really crack on with that. And we'll kick off with the main headline news, most of which revolves around Alpine. Jack Doohan has been retired from his main driver role at Alpine. He's been demoted to lead choice reserve, with Franco Colapinto stepping into the breach, which is a strange move considering that Flavio Briatore is Jack Doohan's manager. Recently, Jack has been subject to a lot of abuse as well online, including reports that his personal email address has been found and targeted, as well as the contact details of his girlfriend and father. There was even word circulating about an increased attack by Argentine fans if he was still in the seat come the Brazilian Grand Prix. It seems that Alpine did very little to actually try and protect Jack against this or try and mitigate this, though they did have enhanced security over the Miami weekend. Words suggest that his team was informed of his departure before the actual Grand Prix itself, but opted not to tell him. Elsewhere in Alpine, Ollie Oakes, the former team principal, has resigned from Alpine, but that's very much the tip of the iceberg. The wording around this is all very important. He resigned. Either that's the statement that the team made him make, or he wasn't happy with the decisions being made within Enstone. He made a very swift exit from the Miami Grand Prix. Alpine said it was due to him having an early flight, but some doubt circulates on that, especially after it was revealed that his brother was arrested on the Thursday before the Grand Prix and was charged with transferring criminal property. William Oakes is listed as a director of Hi-Tech GP on company's house and was arrested on the Thursday ahead of the sort of free practice on Friday and all that. He was found to be in possession of a large amount of cash at the time of his arrest. While the Formula 2 team have criminal money. Well, bear in mind, who did Nikita Mazepin race for in Formula 2? Hi-Tech. So is Ollie Oakes now on the run in Dubai with dodgy rubles that he is laundering through his Formula 2 team? Again, speculation surrounds that, but the actions that have prevailed suggest that that is potentially what appears to be the case. More so, while there have been raids on Hi-Tech HQ by financial sort of process in the UK, Hi-Tech, or at least some trucks with cars that were belonging to Hi-Tech, have arrived at Imola, but they are plain white trucks bearing no branding at all. So it'll be interesting to see how this spins out through the rest of the weekend. I haven't checked to see if there's any details on what the cars look like, what their branding on them is, or sort of quite how they're going to be run across the weekend. But I imagine it's a very interesting time indeed.
In my own kind of order here, because you've reminded me of something I was going to say. I was going to go back to the start, but you're saying about a white kind of blank canvas for Hi-Tech coming into this weekend. When having a word with Bruno Machado the other week about, would Cadillac come into F2 and F3 when they join F1, as they'd made the offer to join the feeder series if it would help their bid in looking more serious as a long-term investor in Formula One, said they're probably not coming on as a team. Maybe they should do what other teams have done and kind of set up a driver program, have an academy, that sort of thing, and partner up with someone there. This, however, does change things slightly, because suddenly there's a team that could become available and you could just assume a lot of the assets quite easily there and potentially even get them a little bit cheaper than you'd normally have to, because, well, why would you try and bargain with someone when you'll desperately need to just get rid of everything when you're trying to just deal with the various different fires that you're wanting to put out? So there's something to keep an eye on as well, I think, for the near future, or we get something where it's a little bit like stake, but you get an organization comes in, takes it over for an interim period, and then a much bigger fish comes along and takes over. Going back to Doohan and Colapinto, though, it's important to stress, well, that it's 5 Grand Prix for Colapinto before a reassessment, which we talked about this before it was officially announced after Miami Grand Prix in our review. So we kind of hinted at it then. And the idea of them just testing out all of their drivers that they've got on their stable and then either choosing one of them to partner Gasly in 2026, or then if you're Bottas, Perez, Joe, etc., going, just choose me instead. So it's a very odd way of going about it, but I suppose it's also a method of going, none of you are worthy, or maybe one of you is, but I don't know if I'm the one that gets chosen, how confident I would then be in that role for how long, considering Doohan was supposed to have a long-term contract with the team in the seat, not as a reserve driver sort of thing. I'm not too surprised if it's true that Alpine haven't done too much to shield him from outside interference, as they've not given the impression of having his best interests at heart, strangely, in his entire stint so far with the team. And it always amuses me in the unfunny sense of fans, quote unquote, claiming to be fans of the sport when they then decide to send death threats to a driver just because their driver isn't in the team yet or may never be or whatever, and that kind of thing. You're not really a fan at that point, you're just some troll on the internet who just doesn't really have anything better to do. So quite sad that they get an opportunity with Colin Binfield last year instead of going, okay, his time is coming, because sure enough, even if he hadn't been called up now, he'd have probably been called up at some point in the next year or two, a little bit like Liam Lawson. You've just had to wait a certain amount of time, and instead of doing that, you've just decided to be dicks essentially and just start death threats to a guy that's worked his ass off to be there, and none of you would even be capable of getting halfway through it in the first place. So a bit sad. Doesn't portray Alpine in a good light, any of this really, but then probably going to get used to that considering Briatore is now back in charge of the team. And yeah, the official resignation, again, quote unquote, from Oaks, given what we now know, in Briatore's colourful history, let's say, I don't think many of us are really buying any of the official lines there. And if you're Red Bull, you're going, well, we look a bit nicer now, and definitely the lesser of two evils, especially for junior drivers. Not that either of them are particularly great role models, especially when you compare them to someone like Mercedes, but you know, still. And yeah, Alpine, we say this at least once a Grand Prix cycle. They just seem to be even more Alpine than they were before, and that's not a compliment.
No, the I think maybe they're just using this year as an excuse to just sort of cycle through their drivers and figure out what they want as a lineup, which is
Is this not part of the 100 Grand Prix plan? They should have known already.
yeah, this was part of their 100 Grand Prix plan. They sort of think we get
Which one? Which
to
one though? The
the
first time, the second. I forget which one we're on. It's like Bottas. Are we on the seventh version of him now? Where are we at?
I've lost track because also we're now on the what essentially this.
Terminator 5, where he goes back to the second film to deal with the consequences. Are we in that kind of messy timeline sort of situation at this point?
We're now on like the sixth, seventh Alpine team principal in about 5 years, aren't we?
It's not good. It's kind of the window gets even shorter between
Yeah.
them,
It's sort of
which
it.
is good news actually when you think about it, which means we don't have to deal with Briatore for very long.
Yeah, also means that there is an increased chance that one day you or I could be the team principal of Alpine.
Oh, I would love to set a record for how short a time you can be team principal for. Just to see how quickly can you shaft me out of the way, because I've done so much damage to this team already.
Yeah, it's sort of like a nuclear half-life. Each one gets sort of shorter by a significant ratio, and sort of there is a point where sort of one of us is the Alpine team principal for a picosecond. You're sort of like, well, I was, but then I wasn't, then I was replaced. So yeah, that's all the interesting news from Alpine and the changes that are going on there. Obviously, Flavio Briatore stepping into the breach as sort of interim team principal. His ban following 2009's Crashgate was lifted, or sort of it expired, it lapsed. So he is sort of allowed back into Formula One within reason. So yeah, there's still a lot to be discussed around sort of the not necessarily legality of that, but sort of the ethics and morality and openness of the sport to simply
It's
say.
very interim in the sense of, I'll take over for a little bit. Oh, you know what? It'd just be easier if I just stay, you know? And we've seen that many a time over in many other roles, in many other circumstances of life, and that always ends well. So I'm glad we're sticking to form.
Yeah, I'll fill this seat for a while. We'll find someone else. Are you actively looking for someone else to take that role? No, not really, but
Sure.
I'll take the
It's
job
kind of
off for a bit.
when you're searching for someone, and then it's kind of like an elusive thing. You've just got a picture of like Nessie and Dracula up there. We're looking. We're looking.
Yeah. We've got options. What are the options? We just leave him in that spot. Anyway, when it comes to taking seats and positions, Carlos Sainz Sr. will reportedly run against Mohammed Ben Sulayem for a bid for the head of the FIA. This is actually a very interesting because also there was word that Susie Wolf was also looking to sort of run for head of the FIA. The elections for it are coming up soon. Word from the inside says that a lot of prominent figures will back Sainz's run for the title. Sainz Senior, two-time World Rally Champion in 1990 and 1992, 26 wins to his name, so isn't unfamiliar with the FIA and its operations, especially in the twilight of his career, still rallying and also supporting his son in Formula One. To date, he has four Dakar Rally wins, two third-place finishes, so not a man to be sniffed at. Obviously, there is the conflict of interest in the fact that his son is actively racing in Formula One at the moment, but the same could be said for Susie
A lot
Wolf.
smaller of a conflict of interest than the current president has in many different
Yes.
guises, I'm sure.
Yeah. However, Mohammed Ben Sulayem has found a way around this in the fact that in a document that was exclusively leaked to the BBC, they found that, let me see if I can find the official statement that was released on this one. FI president proposes changes to governing body, essentially giving him the power to veto anyone who wants to run against him. So he's turned the FIA into a dictatorship, is what he's planning.
I may have jumped the gun with my comments about Breit Corey there, but they seem very applicable to as terms of a linkage to the next story. So that's worked a treat, and yeah, that's always the way you want to go about it, isn't it? Nice, fair, free election, and you're already stopping people from coming into meetings when there's absolutely no cause for it. So yeah, the next thing, yeah, that's why bother having opposition? Yeah, that's a real smart move, man. Good job.
Yeah, it also the paperwork that was revealed also suggests that it would give Ben Sulayem a further sort of control over the FIA Senate. So basically, he could overrule anything that they vote on, propose on, agree on, if it's not in
Cue the
interest.
line from episode 3 of Star Wars from Chancellor Palpatine.
I am the Senate. Yes. Yeah, interesting times. Meanwhile, more positive news. Juan Manuel Correa is off to Indy NXT with HMD Motorsports. He's there for 7 race weekends and is replacing Bryce Aaron, fitting this in around his IMSA commitments, which is nice. We've always backed Correa as a good little driver, and it's great that he's sort of got a racing career that's still sort of flourishing and building. And obviously, American driver, so back on American soil, doing some great racing series over there.
Yeah, it's nice to see where he finally landed after he exited F2 last year. He's got a great yellow and blue livery in the Indy NXT Championship, and didn't get off to the best start in the world. He DNF'd in his first race last weekend, but then finished in P14 in second after a little bit of argy bargy here and there. But again, baptism of fire, probably used to that at this point, and it's just nice to see him back and another driver from Formula 2 making it over into the American Racing Series. Obviously, Dennis Hauger is there doing what we expected him to do in Formula 2 and never did, and he's kind of having quite a nice resurgence at the moment. So it's nice to see these drivers getting the chances that they deserve when we know there's more within them. And I think obviously Correa has the whole unfortunate history with him, and it's one of those things, if it hadn't been for the accident, where would he be now if he'd been able to capitalize on the skill and potential we know he had at that point? And I'm not saying he's lost it, but obviously it's changed, as it obviously would. So it's nice that he's getting the chance to at least see things through a bit further, because I think in some regards no one expected him to get this far in the first place after the incident. So to see him back in any way and to keep going is great, and let's see how long we can push it for.
Yeah, every race he's still entering is very much sort of a personal win for him, I suspect. Meanwhile, in other junior series news, Brad Benavides is back in Formula 3. He joins AIX. He hops into the seat that Freddie Slater was in Bahrain, that had previously been home to Nikita Bedrin. Bedrin left to prioritize his Freca campaign this year, which makes sense when you look at what Antonelli did coming out of it. James Headley also replaced Javier Sagrera at AIX too. He had previously replaced Matias Zagazeta for the Monaco F3 rounds last season. So, all change in AIX at the moment, with essentially a fresh slate of drivers once more.
Fresh but familiar with Benavides, at least. He's been around before. He scored smashing 3 points in F3 back in 2022 in the sprint race in Spa, and competed in about two-thirds of F2 in 2023, getting some total of 0 points on that occasion. He went back to Euro Formula Open Championship last year, which he did win, to be fair, And he was on the podium in all but four of the 24 races. So I think it might have been a case of he tried running before he could walk properly. And I understand why drivers do that, because if you're given the chance and you got the money, fuck it, why not? But I think considering his performance in the Formula Open last year, that's probably the smarter way to go about it, and then make the jump in his community and see how he now does in F3 compared to before, and with a bit more of a solid foundation behind him. Headley, meanwhile, he's been in British F4, he's been in GB3, he won the Junior Championship back in 2019. That's the kind of background we're used to seeing before you happen to make an appearance in F3 for however long, because again, AIX, they seem to like to cycle through drivers as much as Red Bull and Alpine at the moment. So, don't know how long we'll really see him for, but he's got more of the traditional background that we're used to seeing. And yeah, why not? Let's just see what he can do.
It's some interesting changes, and again, it'll be refreshing to see them get the opportunity. More feeder series news, and this is Formula One Academy, which will be running its missed race from Miami in Montreal. The layout for the weekend will be Friday will be practice and qualifying, Saturday will be race one and race two, and Sunday will be race three. The grid for race one will be established using the grid as it should have been for the second race in Miami, with the wildcard driver for this round starting from the back. Normal points will be awarded for a standard Formula One Academy race two. Race two will then be a top eight from Friday's qualifying reversed and sprint race points, and then race three will be the natural grid and full pole points. I need to check how the points are awarded for pole for some of these, but given that it's based on an event that happened in Miami, I think Chloe Chambers was awarded the points for qualifying on what would have been pole for the second race in Miami. So it's all a bit sort of higgledy-piggledy, and it does suck
I think you
for.
get 4 points for it, and you should get to keep it because it's pole, it's a separate session, it's still run, and even though you didn't get to start from there, that's not
Yeah, you still
invalidating the
achieved.
qualifying results, especially if they're using those results
Yeah.
for the first race in Canada. So that
You
should
achieved
all be
that
pretty
result, so
straightforward.
therefore we'll get your points for it. Yeah, it does suck for Ava Dobson, though, who obviously won't be
Yeah.
partaking in that race.
It's a little bit like Alicia Palmoski last year. They ran the second race from Qatar in Abu Dhabi after the GT racing there ended in the barriers and they couldn't get it fixed in time. But then Palmoski didn't get the chance to come back for another race. And I was kind of hoping they'd maybe change that. There's still time to change that. If they wanted to bring Ava Dobson up to Canada, it's not the furthest distance that you'd have to travel. A little bit like Qatar isn't terribly far from Abu Dhabi. If Alicia would have stayed around for a bit longer, you'd think they'd maybe have tried making something happen there because it's no fault of the wildcard driver. But I doubt it'll happen, but it'd be nice to see. But it's also good that at least they're keeping the continuity going of, okay, we missed a race here through weather, and admittedly could happen again in Canada. And it gets a little bit interesting if it does, then, because how many races do we then have at the next round, and do we hope against hope that it's just dry the entire time? But that's potentially something we'll deal with in June.
It's yeah, one of those things of how many times can you kick the same can down the same piece of road. But we'll see how it goes. Meanwhile,
Put
Mick,
all the wild card drivers in for one big race at the end and just have fun with it. There we go.
that would be quite interesting. Meanwhile, Mick Schumacher has reportedly been in talks with Andretti about an F1 seat. The outfit was impressed by his rocking up alone to the meeting, that he was confident to speak and deal with his own contract negotiations, and liked his sort of forward thinking and clean approach, reportedly. So very much aligned with what they're hoping to bring to the sport, of just sort of a clear, no nonsense, get on and deal with it sort of approach. Which, if that's what they're sort of dealing with now, that's going to be quite a fresh one to see when it comes to sort of openness and clarity within Formula One.
We talked about this a little bit, I think, after Miami because of the whole Perez rumors, and I've been before after, I forget at this point. And I obviously wasn't too excited about that. But Mick, I would actually really enjoy this. Essentially, he only had one season in F1 with Haas, because let's face it, 2021 doesn't count. And if he was with them now, I think the evolution that Haas has gone through since then would suit him more. He's performing well in the World Endurance Championship at the moment. Finished third place in Spa last weekend. Some brilliant overtaking around turn 15 and 16, which is traditionally not an area where you see much overtaking, regardless of the category. And he just stuck to his guns and made it work. And that was really impressive. I think he does deserve a second shot. And if you partnered him with an IndyCar driver or someone a little more experienced, but see, does fit in that window of experienced but rookie, then that would course correct my excitement for Cadillac that neither Perez nor Joe inspired when we talked about it last time. And as you say, he came in with this very cool, calm, collected, straightforward approach, no backup, no kind of weapons, as the thing goes, that thing just came in, did his thing, and impressed them. And that's kind of what you want, I think, as a driver, as a team, as someone watching from that and hearing about it, going, ah, fair enough. Balls to go in there and just go, hire me. This is why. Kind of, I'll do what George Russell did, but I don't need a PowerPoint. That sort of thing. It's nice, and I think, why not? Schumacher, Cadillac, two great names go together. You get the right third name to go with that and see who they have as in kind of management roles. You could beef that out quite nicely then.
There's scope for it to sort of form into quite an interesting outfit that could actually bring something very, very lucrative to Formula One. I say lucrative in the best sort of sense, not necessarily financially, but
But
something.
again, Cadillac keeps saying they want to do things differently and in a bold manner. Schumacher, Cadillac. That's pretty bold.
Yeah, that would be very nice to see. And some final bits of news. Max Verstappen has been tearing up the Nürburgring. Under the alias of Franz Herrmann, he was seen testing a Ferrari 296 GT3 car. While the official times haven't been released, it seems he was close to the record time around the track of a 7 minute 49 second lap, not far from that of Frank Stippler's N24 pole time of 7:51 either. So he was on the money. And again, this is one of the things that I've always sort of, as much as I'm not Max's hugest fan, I do really admire his adaptability as a racing car driver and the fact that you can put him in pretty much anything and he'll be quick on sort of off the mark. And this is sort of part of that, is the fact that you can chuck him into a very different behavior of car and immediately he's up there with a very legendary driver for lap times. Also, it sort of suggests that he's looking at potentially a future career doing something a bit more relaxed, a bit more sort of less intense across the span of a year. And
I'm hoping that if Carl Larson doesn't get the double done with the Indy 500 and the Coca-Cola 600 this year, that Verstappen just decides next year or the year after, depending on when he strategically decides to retire, to give him more prediction points, that he'll just go and do that and make it happen purely because he can and he is that adaptable to go, literally, I've gone and done the Indy 500. Okay, get me a helicopter. I'm going down to Charlotte. I'm going to go and get into a NASCAR now. And why not? I think that'd be a very Max Verstappen thing to do and annoy enough Americans, but would still impress them at the same time, and they go, damn, we can't be too annoyed at him because what a job.
yeah, it would be an impressive move and one that I don't think is outside the bounds of reasonable for Max Verstappen to achieve once he departs Formula One, which we don't know when he's going to do that, but there is suspicion that it might
Canada,
be
I
sooner
told you.
end of the season, maybe. Anyway, some fun facts for Imola ahead of the weekend, and it's more tyre talk, really. This is the debut weekend for the C6 compound of tyre. Pirelli has gone for the softest three compounds possible. It was never used in testing, so I doubt it will even be used much in the race, if at all, given that the degradation we've seen on soft options so far has been pretty biblical. It might be used for a Q3 lap, though, but that really depends if it can actually hold on across a lap. We've seen a lot of tyres suffering over a lap this season, let alone one that is incredibly soft.
Time for a wet weekend of racing, I'd say.
Yeah, we'll bring out the soft tyres and then simply never use them just for wets and inters the entire time. Anyway, with that set, we'll move into some
There
hard.
are some other things to talk about with Imola if you want an extra fun fact that's not tyre related.
Oh, go on then, treat me.
Which two teams have the most wins in Imola?
Ferrari and Williams.
Correct. Eight apiece. You've got McLaren after that with six, Red Bull with three, Brabham with two, but then there are four teams that have one each. Go.
Mercedes.
There's one.
Renault.
And probably the easiest one. Renault is also there. Then you have two more that have a Grand Prix each.
Jordan.
Mm-mm.
Gonna go for something a bit strange like ATS or Ligier.
Benetton and Lotus
Oh,
also have a
should have
Grand
guessed
Prix
Benetton, of course. It would have been a Schumacher one, wouldn't
which he didn't, so it's okay. We can move into predictions now.
it? Yeah. But anyway, there we go. Brilliant piece of history, and I'm impressed I knew as many of those as I did. Predictions and pole position prediction, Timo, yours, please.
Max Verstappen.
Nice, clean, easy. I think it's going to be an interesting one. For me, though, it's a new home race for Oscar Piastri. He was recently inducted into the Hall of Fame for a small Italian town that was able to trace his heritage back. So I think now he's on home soil of Italy, he's going to go well and earn himself a pole position.
Can't wait for the Turkmenistan Grand Prix, where we also find out he's about 24th Turkmenistani.
Yes, yeah, it's a fun thing, but he was at like a full sort of ceremony for it across across the, I
They
mean.
do things properly.
Yeah, and he seems to have been enjoying it. And again, it'll give him a bit of favour from the home crowd. Meanwhile, on the podium, Timo, yours.
We've definitely diverged in our pathways for this one. I've gone for Piastri to win, Hamilton in second, and Antonelli in third.
I've diverged a little bit. Yeah, Piastri to win. I've gone the other Ferrari in second, and then Hamilton in third. So Piastri, Leclerc, Hamilton, which is.
You've ironically used hope as a strategy again, which, if you'd watched the latest F1 trailer, Brad Pitt does not endorse.
Yeah, hope is not a strategy. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Yeah, my hope is waning. A fastest lap prediction, Timo.
Oscar Piastri's going to get that as well. He's just on it.
I've gone for Verstappen. I think he's going to be sort of pushing towards the final bit. He's going to be on a unique strategy that's going to give him the opportunity to really absolutely send a fly around there. Or we're going to see sort of
Be
Verstappen.
four sets of the new tyre compound.
Or we're going to see, like you suggested, possibly a wet race, and he sets the
Four
fast.
sets of the new tyre compound and then wet.
Yeah. So he sets the fastest lap with a heavy fuel load, and then despite the fact that it's wet for the rest of the race, no one can get close to matching it. Ergo, Verstappen holds on to the fastest lap point. And then we get to the wild prediction. Timo, yours would be very spicy for the championship.
Lando Norris DNFs. Got to happen at some point, including before Austria.
Yeah, it might well do. Meanwhile, I'm going for double Alpine points, which I think is just sort of shredding money at this point if it was a gamble.
Points in the race, points on the driver's licenses, points getting deducted, and it's double points getting deducted from Alpine as a whole for being so Alpine. What are we covering all of these bases or?
Points awarded to both drivers. I think we're gonna see. I think. It's going to be like a P9 and a P10. I'm not saying big things for Alpine, but I think they're going to double point it, maybe.
I hope only one of them gets P10 now and that and the other P11. It's just like, meh,
Yeah,
nearly.
I've spoken that into existence now, but there we go. That is all we have time for on this episode of the Undercut Podcast. We'll be back next week with a review of the Imola Grand Prix. In the meantime, though, Timo, any more from you?
You can find me over on Everything F1, where over the course of the like 24, 48 hours or so, I shall have an article out with a little chat with Gabriele Mini and Roman Stanek from Formula 2.
Oh, very nice. And in the meantime, if you want more from me, you can obviously pick up the latest issue of Classic Car Weekly or listen to the Classic Car Weekly podcast. Otherwise, I'm all across social media as at Jesse on Cars on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, the usual spots. So without further ado, I'm going to go get this episode edited and out before the weekend for the Imola Grand Prix arrives. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back soon.